Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our great big Friday show here on Catholic Answers Live. Today we change up our format just a little bit. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we're going to welcome a panel of guests today, something we might call, I don't know, Catholic Discussions Live or something, a chance to chat about the world today from a Catholic perspective. And to keep things moving for Friday, instead of covering one topic per hour, we'll probably cover – well, we'll cover as many as we want. We'll cover as many topics as we want, but at least a couple topics each hour. As always, you are welcome to join in the conversation. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-318-7884. I am joined in the studio today by our chaplain, Norbertine Father Hugh Barber, and by our president, Chris Check. Welcome, gentlemen.
Happy to be here and honored to be here with two brilliant minds.
Yes, he brought both of his brilliant minds, and I'm here too. He's got two in his head, none in mine.
Cy has a very literate, elegant mind, but he doesn't admit to it, though.
I wasn't aware of it. That might be why I don't admit to it. But I wanted to say, are you okay that I introduced the chaplain first and then the president?
I think that's appropriate. I think there's something in St. Alphonsus or something where if you saw a priest and an angel walking down the street together, you should recognize the priest first. Is that in St. Alphonsus?
Wow.
Just make up something.
I'm sorry, Father, but if I saw you walking down the street with an angel.
Maybe it was Francis de Sales, Louis de Montfort.
I get the point, but that's out of the reverence to Jesus.
Yeah.
Yes.
He does not like clericalism at all, man.
I'm opposed to it.
Yeah, too. No, I mean, we should be opposed to it, but this guy, man, if you a hint of clericalism, he will get on you. So
that's good. I'm glad you say that.
The angel would probably be more clerical.
Well,
than
you wouldn't be able to see the angel, or you might if the angel allowed you to see him or her.
Right.
Or it. Right. Father, you scandalized. You better correct that.
Scandalized by the
him,
assigning
him
sex or gender. Well, no, it's sex.
Let's not get into that. That's not one of the topics we're going to talk about.
No, that is
today.
Not one of the topics.
Let's avoid the gender.
I just want to say, though,
I'm trying to be 21st century here, Father.
Okay, fine. But you're succeeding.
You say that like it's not a good thing. Here's what happened. I've been here like almost a year and a half now, Father. You've been here, I don't know.
Since October 1st or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of really cool conversations happen here. I will just walk up and people are talking about amazing things, and it's amazing people talking about amazing things. And I thought, well, why don't we get some of those conversations on the air? So I invited two magnificent conversationalists, and they both turned me down. So then I said to you guys, would you be willing to – no, sorry about that. I want to.
How long had you rehearsed that?
No,
one
that,
there?
That just came
to you.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, neither one of us were ever Baptist with a D. So, you know.
Yes, right. Now that guy is a conversationalist. You know who I'm talking about? Baptist with a D.
Sure.
That's what Tim Staples says.
Baptist.
So I thought, well, you know what? Let's start with some fashion. My topic that I chose to start with. Why are you rolling your eyes at me?
I didn't roll my eyes. I just I'm waiting.
You've heard about the Met Gala?
Next topic. Next topic, please.
Oh, no.
The Met, which is – what is that? The
Metropolitan Museum of Art. Yes.
In New York.
Very
they have
venerable
an annual
institution.
Fashion
some magnificent
gala,
pieces there.
To raise money. And this, I guess,
which they need desperately.
I'm sure that they do. The endowment is probably just terrible. But this time they chose to, and actually, I think that the some of the display that they were doing is very interesting. They were displaying, or they were having in one of their galleries, vestments and accoutrements from the Vatican.
That's the right word, yeah.
Accoutrement, is it?
Right, it is, because it was all frou-frou stuff. It was all vestments and, you know, morses and fancy vestments and whatnot. It wasn't
right.
It said the Catholic imagination, but it wasn't really art per se. It was fashion.
Yeah, right. It was, and that I wasn't.
It was ultra campy. Okay. It was not like a.
They turned us
balanced
into camp
view of Catholic art or aesthetics. It was all clothes and stuff like that. Although the things that they are displaying there are magnificent and worth seeing, and I wouldn't discourage anyone from going to the exhibit there at the Metropolitan Museum, because there's some really beautiful things there that are very edifying to see. But that's different from their inaugural celebration, which is something else altogether, if you really want to talk about it.
Is that what you thought too, Chris Camp?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was, and of course, in the costumes of the guests.
That part, how do people not know that that's offensive? Like,
I think a famous Hollywood
actress I saw dressed to imitate a cardinal from I can't remember the Spanish painter El Greco.
When you get to the point where there's a demonstration where. Even to describe objectively what they were doing is offensive over Catholic radio.
Yeah, that ain't good.
There's a real problem. Because I could describe some of the outfits, but I don't want to say those words. Yeah. I don't want to say it.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Sure.
I don't want to say it. I'm very sorry that it happened.
I think offensive here is a word that needs to be unpacked a little bit.
Outrageous. Evil.
To be sure, but an outrage against what? Against reverence, right? Against our Lord, against
the worship of God, according to the Christian religion.
Yes,
sacred priesthood, especially because it's all a send up of the priesthood. It's like we're all just dressing up for the fun of it,
but
we're not.
My point is that word that offends me, or I find that offensive, is something that is
overused.
It's very much a part of common conversation parlance. But in this case and in other cases, what we're talking about here is something that offends against truth, right? It's not I'm bothered by that or I find that music offensive.
So that hurts my feelings.
Right, precisely. Yeah. That's not the problem here. The problem here is a more significant one, and that is that it is an assault on truth and beauty.
Yeah, it's at least a misrepresentation of what Catholic imagination is all about.
Oh, and by the way, absolutely deliberate. Too. It's deliberate. And I'm sorry to take out a tired argument now that's been used a billion times in the wake of this horrible, horrible event. But of course, we would not see this if this were some kind of artistic exhibit celebrating, you know, the Jewish tradition.
No, can you imagine? Like, we're all going to dress up like Hasidic Jews or something and camp
I'm all
around.
For it. Look, I'd be
no, but
I'd
do it
dress
in a
like
miniskirt
any day of the week,
right? Yeah,
rather than put up with the nonsense that we saw there.
Yeah,
yeah, or much less Islam.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Well,
yeah.
Nathan is already getting close. He's got his little, he's got his beard. So you just work on the forelocks. It'll be okay. Just don't cut anything. That's our call screener. You know.
888-318-7884 is the number if you want to participate in this conversation. I can always, to me, it comes back to Walker Percy. Everything comes back to Walker Percy.
And
Percy,
absolutely.
Percy made fun one time of, he used to make a lot of fun of Ernest Hemingway. And he said Hemingway's interest in the Catholic Church was an interest in the very things that Catholics aren't very interested in, which is all the basically campy stuff, you know, the thing, like he said, as a Catholic, what you're interested in is like the worship of God. But what Hemingway's interest was, there's so much Catholic stuff in Hemingway's writing, but it's always on the wall, you know, it's always the background of it.
He went to Spain to help the communists destroy all of that.
I guess that would kind of
so he was kind of interested before they knocked it down and killed the people that were in the church. They decided they might want to take a look at it.
Yeah, right.
For whom the bell tolls, right? But it's still a beautiful novel.
Yeah, of course. But whatever.
For whom the bell tolls.
Want to be romantic, fine. But the point is that we have a religion.
No, it's true. He drove an ambulance, right? In the Abraham Lincoln Brigades.
He's not a bad person, but the religion we profess seems strange to other people, and what they notice is strange about it is the visuals.
Yes, so that is very well put. That I think that's very
the
well put.
Visuals they don't understand.
So if I think of course this persists. If Hollywood is going to make a picture that includes something Catholic, then they're not going to find one of these post-conciliar churches that looks like a bunker or a cafeteria. They're going to find a beautiful setting. And actually, I think that there is some hope and comfort that we can draw from that reality. They're drawn to that aesthetic, right? They're drawn to it, and then maybe it's the way of beauty, and then that'll be the way that brings people to the fullness of the truth.
Yeah, we would hope so.
One would hope, but you do kind of get the sense of using symbols up rather than a proper, you know, because you're the use of Catholic symbols for purposes of camp or to make a horror film more horrifying and all that, you are abusing the symbols.
Of course.
And you're abusing.
And you're taking their power away, I would say.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Yeah, it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This is what we're into now. A little thing of hosts and a crucifix and holy water, and everyone goes, ooh, you know.
Yes, yeah, right.
Except that, yes, I'm in agreement with both of you, except that the movie, for example, The Exorcist, is never going to be made with, you know, the Baptist preacher.
That's right.
It's the guy with the Roman collar. Right.
Yeah.
And Friedkin acknowledges this in his discussion about the picture. He says when the devil comes to town, you go find the guy with
Catholic
the priest. Go find the guy with the Roman collar.
Right.
And
right.
So even the world that hates the church recognizes this reality about her.
Yeah, well, you could say that's the positive aspect of the whole thing, is that there's an indirect acknowledgement.
Yes.
That all this stuff is somehow strangely important to these people who despise the church's teaching on how they should behave.
Well, it's like
they like all the visuals and the beautiful stuff, but they don't like to be told how to behave. And in a certain area of life, which we will leave unmentioned. But the point is that, yeah, there you are.
Well, it's like the quote from Chesterton that's outside our studio here, that studio name for G.K. Chesterton, where he says, and I'm not going to get it word for word, but basically the world pays the compliment to the Catholic Church by not tolerating in her all the transgressions that the world willingly tolerates everywhere else.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a compliment.
Of a sort.
Yeah.
But it's a compliment that carries – it's still a rejection though. It's like we want Catholicism to be good, and there's something about it that we are maybe even in our hearts secretly attracted to, but we don't
Or
like
maybe
it.
We're not even prepared to admit that we're attracted to it.
As
right?
It says in Proverbs, train a young man in the way he should go when he is young, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And if we look at that culturally, we can say that our culture was trained in the Christian faith, and we're now in our last coughing gasps of
in the death rattle
and old age. And so maybe this is just a weird sign that people are interested in what we have to offer. Maybe that's what the prelates that arranged this thing or allowed it to happen had in mind.
Yeah.
I hope they did. I'd say that if they have better judgment than mine, great.
Well, I hate when he talks. It makes me feel like, why are we talking at all? When he says stuff like that. I mean, that's beautiful. But we got to take a break. But when we come back, I want to ask about the other side of it, though. Are we Catholics rejecting the very art that these people are making fun of? That is to say,
this is another problem.
Are we taking seriously enough our obligation to make beautiful things, make beautiful architecture in the way that previous centuries of Catholicism did? Hang on with your thought, all right?
I've got that thought. I'm going to hold on to it too.
We'll be right back with more of our Catholic discussions live today here on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God, to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix, I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live for this Friday afternoon. We're changing up the format to Catholic Discussions Live, and we're having a discussion with our president, Chris Check, and our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber. We're discussing the art and beauty this half hour, inspired by – I don't know if inspired is the right word.
Provoked.
Provoked by the Met
that's
Gala.
What my Southern grandmother would say, I am so provoked.
Well, that's how we are provoked. But here's – I wonder if – well, how much do you ever hear talk at the diocesan level or the parish level about patronizing the arts, or you know that we Catholics have an obligation to make beautiful things, support artists? I who are the prominent Catholic artists now? I mean, well, I don't know that we are even interested in it anymore.
Sad to say, the Catholic Church institutionally in the United States does a good job in some places of cultivating the great monuments of Catholic culture aesthetically. But not everywhere. And just like look at San Diego, go online and look at the music program at the Episcopalian Cathedral, and you will find a magnificent, overwhelming profusion of classical liturgical music, both choral and otherwise. Just unbelievable every single week.
Yes, right.
That's all I say. I'm not comparing it to anything else.
Here you are.
I'm just saying you just go online and look at it, and you go, why are they doing all this stuff?
Right.
And we're not. It's our music. Just as much as it is theirs,
right.
Or maybe not. But I mean, the point is that there's a lack of application.
So, Father Hugh makes a very good point. So, institutionally or broadly throughout the institutional church, this art and beauty, I think, have been neglected.
Of course, and think about it. If you're an Hispanic, you are not allowed to go to a mass anywhere that isn't a guitar mass in American church today. The Hispanic tradition is enormous. It's full of choral things and polyphony and magnificent music.
Yeah.
It goes back to, you know, that they were composing at the time of the missions and before.
Right.
But if you're an Hispanic in most dioceses, if you go to the Spanish mass, you're only allowed to have a guitar mass. And this is sort of condescending and ridiculous because they have a tradition that's even deeper than maybe what the Northern European Catholics have.
Right.
So you don't see it anywhere. You have to go and go to a Protestant cathedral to hear it.
But then – so this is the question that I would put to you two good men, and we can come to in a moment, I think, where there are such places where there's a restoration.
Yeah.
And here in San Diego, at St. Anne's, they have a magnificent choir. So is it – is it just neglect, Father Hugh, or is it or it's sort of a deliberate rejection of the tradition?
I don't think it's neglect might describe it, but deliberate rejection, no. It's not like there's any malice in all this. This is people go around business as usual. And after the council, instead of really restoring or renewing ecclesiastical music, they just stopped doing what they did before, and then various copyrighted hacks produced all kinds of things that could be mass-produced and sold for mass.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't a coherent – in other countries, for example, in Germany, where they have a wonderful choral music tradition and in the church, the Bishops' Conference put together, you know, norms and hymnals and everything where you don't find any offensive music in Germany, generally speaking. I mean, it's all really nice.
Yeah.
And it's on a high level, and it's not a liberal conservative thing either. It's just they have it there, you know. But here, it's just kind of we didn't have the tradition, and so they didn't fix it in the 60s.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, and this is not about music; it's about architecture, but I think it's the same question. And I'm trying to come up with an example that's far enough away from here right now that I'm not going to give offense to anybody. But if you've ever been to the academic quadrangle at Georgetown University, what you see there on three sides are these beautiful neo-Gothic buildings,
right?
And then at the southern end, I think the southern end of it, close to the Potomac, you've got this Soviet-style library that is jarring. And the only thing – when I see that, the only thing I can think is this was a deliberate effort on the part of the architect and the people who chose to put it there to do something ugly and to offend against the space.
In that case,
I would call it a rejection.
I wouldn't go – I would say that it's human respect, that people at a certain point, they will
– This is why he's a priest. He's merciful. I'm so intolerant.
Yeah. That what's in fashion is what people will go with. And
but it just doesn't fit there. I mean,
now you can say very, very clearly, nowadays that would not happen. Look at the Dominican Library at the Dominican House of Studies at Catholic U. If that new library had been built in the 80s or 70s, it would be a horrible, awful structure with, you know, just steel, concrete, and glass. But no, they built it in the 90s and the noughts, and it's this beautiful thing that continues in neo-Gothic arcades and has views and everything because so I think we're in a better place than we were back then. But I don't know how deliberate it was. I think it's in human respect follows things. So we just have to get people to view as chic things that are actually beautiful.
That is happening too. I mean, I think that
– But we want them to believe it's more than chic. We want them to believe it's good.
Well, we want to believe whatever's going to get them to do the thing that they're supposed to do. And chic is maybe for some people might mean good.
Chic is fashionable because then in 10 years from now it'll be something different.
That's 50. True. I concede the point.
Oh, I got one on.
No, you're right.
I have to mark that down, Si. I have very strong feelings about architecture in the 20th century and with the whole Corbusier and the Brutalists and the
Bauhaus.
The Bauhaus and the monstrosity of it all is horrific.
At least it all matched. That is, you didn't build a Brutalist church and then put a giant polychrome plastic statue of Our Lady in it.
In the inimitable words of Chris Cech, it was Soviet. It just looked horrific.
Right, but a Soviet building needs Soviet imagery. It doesn't need things out of a
catalog. But it's also the case, though, that there is a recovery going on in architecture, in the postmodern architecture,
absolutely,
with the idea that architecture fits in a context. And I don't think anybody would build a brutal building like that now. Among three neo-Gothic buildings, they might build a postmodernist building, but it would reflect those buildings in some way. There's a way in which architecture today is more willing to dialogue with the community.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was much more with – especially Corbusier, who I think is just a horror, it's an imposition on the community.
Now, we're getting very, very ethereal for our listeners, you know, so maybe we need to go on some topics.
I just want to –
it'd be spiritually useful for everybody.
So far, I've used two words that required French pronunciation, and we're not even through.
I think you got
your – Corbusier, no. Excuse me.
Did you get your French from watching Peter Sellers movies?
No. I had a wonderful French teacher named Pepe Le Pew. He was magnifique. And
it was not Inspector Clouseau?
No. Pepe Le Pew was much – better in French.
As Father Hugh observed, there are places and more of them with each passing day around the country where architectural beauty is being restored.
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
Least of which, of course, St. Michael's Abbey up in just north of us.
Romanesque Abbey and monastery in the classical style.
Yeah. Now, Romanesque is very old. That we're going
very
back
old, right? before the Gothic.
Yeah. And so why Romanesque?
I think in some ways Romanesque meets modern sensibilities a little more immediately than Romanesque or Byzantine meet them a little better than the Gothic. It's also not as expensive.
Let's get a definition here, Father Hugh, of Romanesque, because I used to use that word many years ago incorrectly when I really meant neoclassical. So sometimes people hear that word Romanesque and they think of buildings that look like, you know, Roman or Greek temples or something like that. But that, in fact, is not what Romanesque is.
Romanesque is mostly based, if I could say in a very general way that would help people's imaginations, is based on the basilica style of Roman churches. That is the long hall with H-A-L-L, with a line of columns and a pitched roof and a tower, with the little architectural details being those where you can see that the classical tradition is still being referred to, but it's basically the place where the people come together in a public space. And then there are various other – I mean there's the question of the arch. There are all kinds of other aspects that an architect could define more precisely than I would. But I would say in terms of people's imagination, it would be the Roman basilica kind of given a certain more – a certain higher and more elevated – profile.
Yeah, so this is one of the places where the church baptizes something in the ancient or the classical or the pagan tradition.
Right, because neoclassical, they started building things as though they were temples.
Right, right.
But the Romanesque is actually the church began to use the public buildings.
Yeah, basilicas.
Of the Roman Empire.
This is the original meaning of the word.
We didn't imitate the temples. We imitated the public buildings. We went from house churches to public buildings, but we never imitated the pagan temple. Until the 18th century.
Father, if somebody wanted to see a picture of what you folks are building just up the road, what's the website?
www.stmichaelsabbey.com.
St. Michael's
ST, Abbey. No period.
You know, you don't need to say www.
I know you don't. Sorry. I'm very old fashioned.
If you think this half hour was challenging, I'm changing the topic when we come back. More Catholic Answers discussions live right after this.
Catholic Answers Live. Father Robert Spitzer.
First of all, you will get a much deeper awareness of your faith, much deeper awareness of the evidence for your faith, explanations of tough theological issues, how science and reason and faith come together, and above all, a deeper awareness of how to practice your faith and how to live it.
Father Spitzer's Universe with Father Robert Spitzer. Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Over the years, we have heard thousands of stories of how the ministry of Catholic Answers and Catholic Answers Live has changed lives all over the world. Do you have such a story? We'd love to hear how Catholic Answers has changed your life. Send your story to us today. Email us at mystory@catholic.com, or you can call 619-387-7200 to make an audio recording of your story.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and it is Friday. We always do a great big giant show on Friday, and our great big giant show this Friday, we thought we'd just change things up a little bit. I don't know if you guys have noticed it. We did a kids call-in show on a Friday. We got a game show in the works. We're doing weird questions with Jimmy Akin on Fridays. We're just trying to maybe make Fridays a little different. Does that meet with your approval, Father?
It's perfectly fine, and it's a way of doing penance if you happen to eat meat.
You're saying that listening to
I'm just the,
that's a
joke. It's a joke.
By the way, we encourage all of our listeners to abstain from meat every Friday.
Every Friday, just it's throughout the year. It's the default, you know.
Yep.
The bishops of England, Scotland, and Wales brought it back, and in those countries, our mother countries,
and you know, there's a beautiful essay by Father Feeney. I don't know why I'm pointing to Father Hugh when I say Father Feeney, called Fish on Fridays. Yeah. And one of the things that Father Feeney, of course, he got into some confusion,
which Father Hugh
can explain respect to the question of salvation and the church's role therein.
Oh, that Father Feeney we're quoting?
Okay. Well, he was a famous author before
He has a beautiful essay, which I would encourage all of our listeners to read, called Fish on Friday. And one of the charming arguments that he makes in favor of this practice universally in the church is that it creates a kind of solidarity among Catholics.
That's right. Why the English bishops reestablished it. They said there's nothing to distinguish Catholics from anybody else publicly, and they went back to it for that reason.
I think we're going to get more of that.
Yeah, and can I just close this loop?
I guess so.
Go ahead. Well, so in the pre-conciliar church, if you look in a missal like the one that Angelus Press puts out, which is quite good for the 1962 missal, they have the old guidelines in there for Lent, and they are considerably they're more severe but not impossible. Than the ones that are imposed now. But one of the difficulties, I think, with Lenten observances today is that, you know, your wife gives up chocolate, you give up red wine, the kids give up video games, and really the only person there that's making the sacrifice is the one giving up red wine. So if everybody's doing the same thing, right, then there's a kind of solidarity in that.
I think that's right. It's nice when, too, like our parish has the Knights of Columbus have a fish fry on Fridays.
See?
And that's nice.
It brings people together.
Yeah, it brings
people
together.
Yeah, Nathaniel worked it up at Our Lady of Grace.
Yeah, his son is working it every weekend. I was there every weekend.
I know where I'm going to go then, which news article I'm going to put in front of you next, because you started off with this discussion of the distinctiveness of Catholic identity. There's some controversy about whether Catholic universities should be emphasizing their distinctiveness as Catholic institutions of learning or as Catholic institutions of learning. Do you see the difference? You see what I did there, Father?
Mm-hmm.
I love when Father dismisses me. It's one of my
favorite. I'm listening.
So they do this survey at Catholic University of America, which is thriving right now. And the survey.
Yeah, under two presidents, they have really restored what was missing at that school a generation ago.
And it's a pontifically chartered school.
Which was the Catholic sense of the place, or identity, if you will. Yeah. But the reason for its existence, the piety that informs everything that goes on there, even piety is not a sufficient word. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But the debate now is, because of this survey that they did, a marketing survey, which is fine. I think it's fine. You're a school. How do we market ourselves? The marketer said, make sure that you emphasize – the marketer, these pros, said you got to emphasize things other than your Catholic identity in order to – because they want rigorous academics as well. Well, a lot of people grabbed that, and I think among them.
Yeah, why are these things exclusive?
America Magazine said, I think the headline in America Magazine was, is Catholic identity like holding back Catholic universities, or, you know, making them less? And then Austin Ruse wrote the piece in Crisis Magazine about Catholic university actually thriving, and where he takes the opposite view from America Magazine. You'll be shocked to know that Crisis and America took two different positions. But whatever. My question is, on Catholic identity, it's not a question of efficiency. It's a question of, why else would you be a Catholic university? I don't understand why anyone would say downplay Catholic identity at a Catholic university. That's ridiculous.
Well, I'll go one deeper than that. There really is, since the incarnation, there's no education that's not Christian education, right? Since the incarnation, since we've had this, the revelation or the reality,
yes,
right, of the incarnation, if we understand education properly and what its purpose is, there's no education that's going to take place outside the context
of Christ,
of Christianity.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Right.
Okay.
Right. And the church's insistence for centuries, and you see it in St. Thomas Aquinas and in all the sound doctors, not so much the late medieval ones and later, who got a little bit off on this point, but there's nothing in human reason, you might say not independent, but considered an abstraction from faith, that the church can't make full use of. And in fact, those things, that whole sphere of human reason belongs to the church. The fact is, we perfect it and elevate it.
If it's true, it belongs to the church.
What I'm saying. Reason. Yeah. I'm talking about something that's really reasonable, true. And so there isn't any sense in which a full Catholic identity could somehow be contradictory to reason.
Yeah,
that's or scientific inquiry,
or the fullness of intellectual life.
Right, just absolutely. But there is the fear on the part of certain people that a certain emphasis on Catholic identity might lead to an attitude which dismisses free inquiry, and that's a genuine concern that they might have. But it has to be something which is governed by the bishops and the Holy See to show that there's never been a case. These great Catholic universities of Europe, right. You know, you just go like Oxford, Cambridge, Paris, Louvain, Salamanca, Alcala, you know, Vienna, Olomouc. I mean, just name the places and say, well, what danger was there to reason? In fact, the church actually allowed people to develop notions which they used against the church later on.
Yeah.
They freely developed in her own bosom, you know. So, I mean, that it's so ridiculous that it almost, you know, it's basically a point of propaganda that, you know, somehow religious faith is going to contradict human reason. Now, if you were to suggest that, say, in a Jewish institution or an Islamic institution, like say, well, I don't know if the studies they do at the Islamic University in Cairo are really serious academically because they're all Muslims. If someone said that openly, what would the reaction be?
Yeah, right.
The reaction would be like, what an outrage, what a horrible thing to say.
Yeah.
But when it's a Christian, and I mean even a Protestant Christian or a Catholic university, then people can make that concern, like, I'm so sorry you're not objective.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, that's not something they say about Cairo or
no.
or Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or
no,
other places.
No, and I think you should market it that way.
We're singled out for this, actually.
Right. But what about marketing
to say? We're singled out along with the Baptists
with
the D.
We invented the university.
Yes.
Come on here and investigate anything you want.
No,
we invented – the university was invented by the Catholic Church. Yeah. There's no question about it.
The church is the inventor of modern education. I think a couple of words here also bear some unpacking, and one of them is free and what that means. And that's you know, as distinct from license, right, and inquiry or speech. So there was another incident that, again, it's kind of like the Met – story. I can't describe it without really offending the sensibilities of Catholic Answers Live listeners. But there was this professor, people are welcome to look it up, though I even hesitate to recommend that, at Holy Cross College. You heard about this guy who had a Christology that can only be described as blasphemous, and a blasphemous interpretation.
And this was a theology professor?
Yes, hired and teaching in the theology department at Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Right. So now, on the one hand, in this country, oddly enough, he's free. Right, to say these things.
Right.
Right. So that's free speech, and he's free to say these things. I suppose, though, that principle ought to be examined there, because you don't really have a right to error, right? But do you?
We're getting into another.
We've got to be careful on that one, because persons have rights.
Right. We can move into that.
The error itself doesn't have any rights, but the person has rights.
Okay. Right. Well, Father can clarify and correct if need be. But that's different from inquiry, which is what would go on in an honest academic environment.
Yeah. Well, what about this side of it, though, too? And I don't know if this is where you were going, but if we have freedom of speech, what about the institution's freedom to be a Catholic institution? Isn't that part of the deal, too? I mean, is that part of free speech that we can get together, we can make a Catholic university, and it's Catholic here?
But nowadays, we have this postmodern attitude where – The they've gone beyond the notion, the sort of popular notions that we've had from the Enlightenment, and there really is no right to disagree with snowflakes, no right at all.
Oh,
that,
I
that
see.
Is, you know, you're simply not allowed to offer your opinion, and they'll shut you down. There's no sense that there's any idea of freedom of speech based on human dignity.
Right.
Because human dignity is a concept which is an abstraction which doesn't correspond to their philosophy, which says there's no such thing as human nature.
Well,
it's all a construct.
Yeah, look what happened to Tony Esselin at Providence College.
Right.
And then more recently that the student there at Providence who was, a resident, what do they call the
people?
An RA, right. And he put up this bulletin board. Oddly enough, at a Catholic school, defending the Catholic Church's teaching on marriage.
Actually, just explaining what it was.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, just yeah.
And he had a riot outside his door.
Yes, yeah.
And he had a riot outside his door.
People said they didn't feel safe in an environment where his opinions could be expressed.
Yeah, so clearly, I mean,
so these places that I mean, they bear no scrutiny. They say they're for free speech, but in fact, they're not. They are the most doctrinaire.
I don't even think they say they're for free speech anymore.
Oh yeah, maybe so. Yeah,
they,
no,
they don't even pretend to be for free speech.
I have read several things in places, in wonderful places like the New York Times about, oh, are we really committed to this free speech thing? You know, I think, wow. But I wonder if the thing about the Catholic University, though, and the distinctiveness of the Catholic University, there, it seems to me there is a kind of reluctance to be distinctive, rooted in love of money, frankly. And I mean, we want students. Students bring money. We want these big donors. Donors love a certain kind of thing that doesn't have to do with the difficulty of being a Catholic
and human respect.
I would say human respect is the bigger.
This is really
picture.
What it is.
People love human respect more than they love money.
Yeah,
but I think on this point,
me, I people, couldn't care less.
People are.
I would like the money. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Father.
Make the check out to Catholic.
If people
want to
consider this issue more deeply, they should just read Newman's idea of the
university. Of a university, right?
Because
All right,
there he clearly distinguishes between the secular function of university and establishing and providing a serious education.
Yeah.
And he's very clear universities are not seminaries. They don't exist just for edification and religious instruction.
No.
They exist for serious inquiry, and he's very, very clear about that. And that's the Catholic position. It always
Fair
has
enough.
Been.
Yes.
I want to add two reading recommendations to Father Hughes. One is easy and brief encyclical Pius XI's Divini Ilias Magistri, or On the Education of Christian Youth, I think is how it's rendered in English. And the best thing written on, you know, primary and secondary education in the 20th century, to be sure, or anyway, short. And then the other one is Father Edward Lean's. In fact, I even brought this is my first edition, The Dogs Chewed the Spine. That shows you how much I love my wife, by the way. I didn't really get angry at her when the dogs...
That her dogs chewed
the spine there. Yeah, but Edward Lean, Father Edward Lean's What is Education? And in fact, I had a quote from it, and I had to dig it up here. But a man is educated when he understands human experience as the divine author of human experience understands it. When he appreciates the beauty that comes from the creative mind of the supreme artist, he is better educated. When he can express with reverence and eloquence the truth and unity of the beauty he has grasped, he's highly educated. So Edward Lean. So there are such places. I was at the Thomas More College of the Liberal Arts.
Is that New Hampshire?
They bestowed upon our fearless leader an honorary doctorate.
They bestowed,
exactly.
So you can call me Dr. Chuck now.
I'll read it in Latin if you'd like.
Well, maybe after the break. But my point is there are such places who understand what Christian education is and what the purpose of it is. And, you know, Emily's alma mater, Thomas Aquinas, just north of us here. And
John Paul the Great. Right, I know what you're going to say, but I wonder –
But the larger institutions have jettisoned this purpose.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about a little bit.
Some of them are trying hard. I mean, there's like the university St. Thomas, and they're doing it, trying to
Catholic Science program.
You guys are not letting me take a break. You let me.
Who's the host?
That's okay.
Are you the host here?
I've lost track of who's the host, but we'll be right back because I do want to talk about whether it's possible that we get trapped by our institutions. That is, and then now we can't be so Catholic because the institution has all these institutional obligations once it gets to be of a certain size and respect in the eyes of the world. But you will have to answer that after the break. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers discussions right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order. order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It is Friday, and as if you've been paying attention, we've been changing up a little bit on Fridays, and hope you enjoy our panel discussion today, where we're just taking important things in the news, especially as they relate to the Catholic faith and to Catholic life, and we're discussing them. Our guests this hour are our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, Norbertine priest, and a member of the Abbey of St. Michael just up the road from us here, and our president, Chris Check, a father in a different sense, a father of mighty young men.
Yes. 27 years of marriage today, Si.
Today, congratulations.
Yes. Yeah.
That is wonderful. Thank you.
We celebrated by worming puppies.
I don't even want to. I have a visual of what that is, but I don't think that
you
I
make
want
them
to know,
eat this oh, goo okay. And then it worms them.
Well, I'm glad they ate the goo, and I hope that they're fully wormed.
Yeah.
And you have Jackie's she's kind of like a saint, isn't she? I mean, 27 years.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. No, she's done.
Why
all,
have we never had Jackie in here? She's one of the funniest people. She's just naturally hilarious.
She's done all the heavy lifting in the marriage.
Has she?
Yes.
Oh, well, somebody's got to do it. While we're talking about Catholic universities, and we're all bragging that Catholics invented universities and everything, I don't want to neglect to brag about the fact that we invented science.
Scientific
well, okay?
inquiry, yes.
There's a real nice article on Real Clear Science the other day, which is not very friendly to religion, about how it was anti-religious bias that made scientists reject the Big Bang Theory when it was proposed by a Jesuit priest, Lemaitre. Oh, I don't want to say the French name.
He was just a priest. He wasn't
Jesuit. I thought he was Jesuit. No? No? Okay. Well, okay. So he was one of you lower kinds of priests, not one of those high Jesuits. Sorry. I got a good look for that.
Though the Jesuits in the 16th, 17th, and 18th century, 16th and 17th century especially, were really just towering intellects.
They created.
Oh, especially at Salamanca. You mentioned Salamanca.
No, well, Salamanca is that's more the Carmelites and Dominicans. But
the Jesuits were at Salamanca.
I know they were, but the Jesuits
what about
created
on the
modern
law?
Education. They created it.
You just think of these guys and the North American martyrs who had obviously just brass and steel and iron will and everything. And yet on top of that, masterful command of languages.
And charitable men, too. Just so willing to give for others.
I mean, the reason Brebeuf was good at what he did in creating a language for the Hurons is because he was a classically trained linguist.
Right.
But that's why it's important to keep in mind that the Church uses everything that's available. And although we will praise institutions that try to maintain the Catholic identity and whatnot, but it doesn't mean that no Catholic should ever go to a secular university or pursue a career.
Yeah, I know he may get a better education.
That is, that we're not saying that you shouldn't go to, like I won't mention any particular institutions, just not so as not to get in trouble. But the fact is, we're not Amish, and we love the Amish.
You're going to say Michigan State, right?
We're not cultic people that just don't participate in the normal
education. You know, I'll name two places that people ought to look at. One is Texas A&M University, and then the other one is the University of Nebraska. And one of the reasons why is because they have very vibrant – to call them Newman Centers doesn't even begin to describe what Bishop Conley has built up there at the University of Nebraska.
Or even Southern Methodist. Southern Methodist has an enormous Catholic community.
It is very close to herding cats, having a conversation with you two on the radio.
And you know,
I was going in a certain direction. I thought you would pick up where I was going when I said
– Sorry.
No, it's – Father, when I tease you, it's all right. But
the Catholic Church invented science.
Yeah. Catholic Church invented science. I thought you would know where
maybe
I was going to go.
Well, we certainly took it to where it is now.
Okay,
yes.
So.
We're talking about our conference on faith and science.
I thought you would bring it up.
In September, it's to build, what's it called? Anticipation.
Yeah.
September, what are the dates? September 27th, 20th, 30th. Right? Always over the weekend of St. Michael.
St. Michael, right?
Right, exactly. Right here in San Diego at the La Jolla Hyatt, right?
Right, at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla, yeah.
Beautiful hotel. They've given us – we're going back. We had such a great time last year. Superb service, an amazing rate, $149 a night. September is the month to come to San Diego.
It is indeed. And who else will be coming? Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
Who is a scientist.
Chemist and theologian. Yes. And Father Terrence Ehrman.
Who also is.
Oh my gosh, has just done so much to help Catholics and non-Catholics understand the place of science in the world. And then Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke. I like saying it that way. That's a lot of names. I should say Cardinal Burke. All right. He really is not a clericalist. He does not like all the fancy pants stuff.
If you want to hear Cardinal Burke's talk, you have to sign up. Hey, gentlemen, we're doing a radio show here. Yeah.
We can fist bump in the middle of a radio show.
If you want to hear...
Don't remember Obama? It's okay.
If you want to hear Cardinal Burke's talk, you have to sign up for the full conference because he is speaking at the banquet on 50 years of Humanae Vitae.
I think the best talks at this conference will probably come at Mass.
I wonder who's preaching the Mass.
Oh, will that be our own chaplain, Father Hugh Barber?
I think
former
so.
Former prior of St. Michael's Abbey.
Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Carlo Broussard.
Jimmy Akin is calling a square dance too, so that's another motivation.
You get your Jimmy Akin M&Ms. We're going to do the live radio show, which I'm sorry. That's my best day of the year. We'll be talking about the
Galileo affair.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, it was the Jesuits at the Roman College there who were verifying all of his discoveries. That whole idea that, you know, the cardinals refused to look through his telescope, it's complete bunk.
We're going to straighten it all out. CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you go.
We're going to equip people who come. We're going to arm people to be charitably conversant in making the case that religion and science are not at odds. In fact, they are in harmony.
And the people who say, oh, there's some conflict between faith and reason or conflict between faith and science, they're attempting to put you on the defensive as a Catholic about something you should be celebrating, not on the defensive at all about. The history of the Catholic Church and science is something to be celebrated, shouted from the rooftops, not hidden from
and
at all.
And where better to celebrate it than San Diego at the end of September?
Yep.
Beautiful weather. That's right. But, you know, the controversy between faith and reason, it's not a speculative one. It works out there. Where you really have to look at faith and reason is where the conflict is when you're tempted to do something you know is wrong.
Then you can easily employ your reason.
That's where it happens.
To justify.
Okay, Father.
The rest of it is just talk. Yeah.
So let's have an example of that.
I don't want to give an example because I don't want to tempt anybody.
Well, we're going to be talking. He can do it next in the next hour. We're going to talk about
war and
peace.
If we're tempted to do something we know is wrong against our reason, then we know that there's that we're motivated to make a judgment against what we know to be true, and that's the contradiction between faith and reason, right there.
Yeah,
it's bogus. It's about moral weakness.
Why do we have the talent, Father, as human beings? Why do we have the ability to not know what we do, in fact, know? I don't know. That's a strange to just be like, I don't.
Well, that's another show. That's the will, the mysterious power of the will, which if
the
I
power
can
of the will to
you,
darken the intellect. Is that what? Just turn it off. Just,
well, you or know, ignore. Sometimes it actually helps the intellect. So it's a very complicated situation.
All right.
We'll leave that up to Calvin and St. Thomas to figure out together in heaven.
Calvin and St. Thomas together in heaven, figuring out The will and the intellect. Now that's a conversation I'd like to be on. I bet it's not like herding cats talking to those two. But
did Father
I hold out hope for Calvin.
Did
he wouldn't
Father
for
just,
me.
Was that a canonization?
He's saying that's on there.
No,
that was an expression
I'm just
of a
saying,
hope.
It's
that's
my nice Catholic hope that it'll all work out for him after 500 years of purgatory.
Now we can stop. We have to go. Enough. Now that we're signing people time in purgatory, we have to take a quick break, and we will be back. I do want to discuss.
Just talking
since we're talking about topical issues for Catholics.
If someone writes a large enough check to Catholic Answers, they can get someone out of purgatory.
Okay, fair enough, Chris. You're a very serious issue next hour. War is in the air everywhere. We got to talk about what's the Catholic's role as a peacemaker. Jesus himself said, blessed are the peacemakers. I often feel like I'm not living up to that call from Jesus. You're going to help me straighten that out when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.